All right, the next section of the workshop is going to involve discussing the dynamics of shame and the experience of induced or carried feeling reality. Now, this particular part of the workshop is about the heart and soul of codependency. This information right here is designed to explain you to you. And if you are codependent and can follow it, you will be amazed at how closely you can identify with it and probably will feel some relief about what I'm going to talk about now. This issue I'm going to be discussing is about what keeps the codependent and keeps the beat going. This took me about 6 years to truly understand. I'm going to talk to you about it in about 45 minutes. I guess I could say feel grateful. You didn't have to go through all the struggle of figuring that out for yourself. It is kind of a difficult concept, but it's very important to understand. In fact, I don't think if you understand this that you can really get into full recovery. My opinion. Now, to begin to talk about this, I start with the concept of reality. I want to discuss reality with you. One of the things I have found in working with codependents and also with myself, of course, is that I didn't have an idea of what reality was. I didn't have a concept of that, and so I made one up in order to talk to myself about my disease. Now, a person's reality is about who they are. That's what I mean by reality. It's about how you experience yourself and how others experience you as you have your reality. Now, when you look at reality, I would tell you that to list four different aspects of your reality to watch. It's made up of your body, which is about what you look like. It's made up of your thinking, which is about how you give meaning to incoming stimuli. It's made up of your feelings, which is about your emotions, which is about your aliveness. Your feeling reality, your emotions give you a sense of being alive. Feelings are generated from your thinking reality. As you think, you will feel, which automatically sets you up in trouble, to be in trouble if you're a codependent, because one of the things that happens to people that are abused is that it kind of skews your thinking. My husband has said it to me very succinctly on several occasions in the heat of a codependency clash with reality. He'll say to me, this isn't exactly what he says. He said he didn't say this. This is what I heard. He said, Pia, you can take perfectly good data, and by the time you swirl it around your brain, it comes out as absolute hog poop out of your mouth. I don't know how you gave meaning, that kind of meaning, to what I just said and did. It's like I can perceive something out there, and by the time I take it into my brain and give it meaning, I have given it meaning far beyond what a normal, functional person would give it. But in addition to that, I have no idea that I just did that. I think this is working, my brain is working perfectly well. Now, you add to that the fact that I'm generating feeling reality in regards to that thinking I've just done, and out of that feeling reality, my behavior will get driven. You can see how codependents are automatically in trouble. And they don't understand that they're in trouble. They think they're acting perfectly normal. When they live with a normal person, it's chaotic for that other person. The fourth part of your reality is made up of your behavior. This is about two concepts, what you do, but also what you don't do. Both. Now, I want to pull out a part of this reality and discuss it in detail. And what I want to pull out is about a fourth of your reality called your feeling reality. Your feeling reality is actually at the heart and soul of your codependency. And that's about the induced or carried feeling reality. Now, right off the bat, you're in trouble in our culture, because our culture does several things to a person's feeling reality that will get them in trouble. This is part of the dynamics of an abusive family system. The first thing our culture does is it tells you most of the time that it's not okay to have feelings. that if you are a mature, well-controlled adult person who is successful, you stay out of your feeling reality at all times and stay up in your head. That's an indicator when you can do that, that you are very well and mature. So the message is that if you've really made it, you don't have feelings. Another aspect of this is that if you do feel you're feeling reality, you are being immature and out of control. And the third part of that that comes out of that too is this, that if you feel intense feeling reality, you are now shifted into being emotional. If it's super intense, you've moved into the realm of being crazy. You've moved into the realm of being crazy. And you get told that. Now, this is an issue for codependents. I will explain in a few minutes that most of us live in this super experience of feeling reality because we carry a whole set of feeling realities from other people with us on board and on overload all the time with our feeling reality that cause us to act and look crazy, and for sure everybody else thinks we are when they watch us. The second thing culturally that is a problem for us is that if we are allowed to have feeling reality, a certain one for sure we're not to have, and it's sex specific. Like in our culture, it's not okay for men to have fear. If a man has fear, he's a coward. It's okay for women to be afraid. That's because they're weak and vulnerable, and you know, it's okay for them to feel fear if you can feel anything. But men aren't to feel fear. Women aren't to be angry. If you're angry in our culture and female, you've now moved into being a witch. But men can be angry. That's their right. But women aren't supposed to be. You're a witch. If you're a man and you're angry, you're just exerting your power. If you're a female and you're angry, you've turned into witchhood. So men can't have fear. Women can't have anger. Nobody is to have pain, specifically. And if you have it, for God's sake, be sure you medicate it. Any alcoholic or drug addict, and alcohol is really a drug, knows what I mean. And that's what a lot of codependency drinking is about. Now, alcoholism and chemical dependency is a disease unto itself, and it's an addiction. It's about a whole process. But I also believe codependents can get into medicating this carried feeling reality and later on get into addiction as a result of medicating the pain and the shame of their issue. So we're taught in our culture that it is absolutely okay to medicate pain and to remove it into not feeling it, and that's okay. And then the other thing is, and this is dreadful, is that in terms of shame, we're not to have that either. I mean, we're to have it, but we're not to talk about it. And we're to distort it and hide it. That's a problem, because among other things, codependency is a shame-based illness. The main issue is about shame. And so automatically, codependents have a hard time getting in recovery because we're busy not talking about that one feeling. Not only are you busy not talking about it, your therapists are busy not talking about it, the public is busy not talking about it, your church is busy not talking about it, everybody's busy not talking about it. So it's hard to get into recovery because the one thing you need to talk about is not supposed to be talked about, and it's misidentified. It's called guilt instead of shame. So we get into big trouble right off the bat. I think it's why codependency has been so long time coming into the realm of treatment. Now, here's the principle that I think recovering codependents need to follow right off the bat, and it's this. I wrote it down here. All feeling reality is wonderful. There's absolutely nothing wrong with your feeling reality. As long as you, when you want to act upon it, act in an assertive way and not an aggressive way. There's nothing wrong with our feeling reality. It is wonderful. It is only when we carry feelings for other people that the feeling experience becomes negative as we become overwhelmed. You see, when we just stand in life with our own feelings and experience them, that is pretty comfortable. But the moment we go to add anybody else's feeling reality, maybe mom's feeling reality, dad's feeling reality, older brother's feeling reality, guess where we go? Overwhelm. Codependent. It is overwhelming for anybody to feel somebody else's feelings. It's enough just to feel your own. Period. Now, what happens is this, just to kind of give you a way to look at this and kind of correct yourself with it. The main feeling reality that I have codependents in recovery focusing on are anger, fear, pain, and shame. Therapeutically, these come up all the time to be dealt with. Now, I want to show you how to tell the difference between when you're acting out of your own feeling reality and when you're into this carried or induced feeling reality. This is really critical because whenever you're over into experienced, induced, or carried feeling reality, you will automatically be thinking and behaving codependently. This is the experience in terms of feeling reality that's codependent. You'll be feeling codependently, you will be behaving codependently, you will be thinking codependently. And a major issue of recovery is to begin to tell the difference between your own feeling reality and carried feeling reality, because whenever you're over here, you will be active and in your disease. Now, I told you that when you're experiencing your own feeling reality, it is a positive experience. And you need to stop thinking about positive and negative instead of looking at your own versus carried or induced. When I feel my own anger, I feel powerful. I feel energized. Anybody's anger, when it's for sure it's just their own, gives them a sense of power and energy. That's vital to anybody. It enables a person to take care of themselves and assert themselves and be who they are. It's a wonderful thing. There is absolutely nothing wrong with anger, no matter what sex you are. When you experience your own fear reality, that also is positive because it puts you on alert that there is danger in your environment and you need to move out and protect yourself. When I feel fear now, I start looking, as long as I know that I'm not overwhelmed with it, so it's my own, I start looking about my environment to find out what's going on that seems to be dangerous to me. Then I check it out. It's a motivator to protect myself. There's nothing wrong with fear either. Pain is even more important. Pain is there to help us in the growing process. As you have pain, you will be able to grow. You know, I think we have a very kind of childlike concept of life and growth and pain that I want to talk to for a minute. I think most of us have been told in our family of origins, because they were dysfunctional, that by the time we hit 18, we would be mature and we would be able to take care of our lives, and that if we were really good at doing that, we would have no problems. And that if we then had problems and got into a lot of pain, something wrong was going on. Now, that's not the case. Life is filled with problems. I don't know how you could be on this earth without having problems. All kinds of things happen to you that's out of your control. And that's going to happen whenever you have anybody else in your life. You won't be able to control them, even though you think you can. Delusion to think you can control anybody. Anyway, you're going to be in a lot of pain. A functional person will use that pain to work through their problems and continue in the maturation process or the growing process. As you age, you need to be maturing. You know, when you're 20, you'll act different than when you're 40, and different than when you're 60, and different when you're 80. Have you ever found a functional person who was 80 years old and having the time of their life? I mean, like, they were just so mature. When you're around them, they had tremendous depth. Have you noticed how lined their face is? How wonderful they are and how they're still producing and seem to almost be producing more. This is a person that allowed themselves to have their pain and to continue to grow all their life. This is a deep person. This is a person that used their pain to grow. And you will also find that a person who experiences a ton of joy and can meet life on life's terms instead of crashing and whining about it all the time and refusing to budge. You need your pain to do your growing, to have an enriched life. And what do we do in our culture? We teach people to medicate it. I got a headache? You mad at mommy? Got a headache? Go take an aspirin. Had a hard day at the office? Sit down and have a few shots of bourbon. You know, it's like, don't pay attention to what's causing the pain that you may need to respond to and do something differently with. Medicate it away. You're not supposed to have it. When we experience our own shame, the feeling experience of our own shame puts us on alert that we are fallible. It's about alerting us to the fact that we're imperfect. That's terribly important, you know, because that enables us to be accountable, again, and spiritual. And that really enhances our life also. So the feeling experience of our own shame is wonderful, too. I am in the process of writing this book, and I'm going to say two things about the title, if I can get the publisher to do it, will be twofold. And it's called Shame, Gift from God, which is this right here, your own. Legacy of Abuse, which is about what the carried feeling reality of shame feels like. That's a legacy. When you carry shame for somebody, it makes you feel less than. It makes you feel bad. It makes, like you're a bad person. It makes you feel worthless. It makes you feel stupid. It makes you feel tiny. It makes you feel, well, it can make you feel all kinds of ways, perverted, whatever. But when you're into the experience of carried shame, if you allow yourself to feel it, you automatically shift into being one down from everybody else. That's the legacy of abuse. Terrible thing. When you pack on board somebody else's anger in addition to your own, guess what you do? You rage. When you pack somebody else's fear around, guess what you do? You get to enjoy, I shouldn't say that sarcastic, you experience panic attacks and attacks of paranoia. When you are into the experience of carried or induced pain reality, you move on into hopelessness. And it isn't unusual to start having thoughts of suicide. And part of this hopelessness is the profound feeling of depression. You know, chemically dependent people die from the chemicals if they don't intervene on themselves. You know what codependents die from? Suicide. Suicide. Or they have the dreadful experience of never living their life. It's like they float through life. They never experience it. They're half dead, half alive, but more dead than alive. I've gotten so... Then in working with... I can spot a codependent sometimes by just looking in their eyes. Because if they've lost their child... the child part of them, through extensive abuse, their eyes are dead. There's a part of therapy called integration of the precious child. You will see in just a matter of minutes, the person go from that dead eye stuff into aliveness. It's like their eyes come alive when they embrace their precious child. Part of what we're talking about. Anyway, the experience of carried pain is one of hopelessness and depression, which can lead to suicide. And it's how we die. Now, what happens to us and how we learn to carry feeling reality or experience induced feeling reality happens to us in the shaming process. The principle is this. I wrote it down here. And this, when I'm working with someone, I make them memorize this too so they can give it back to me verbatim. Whenever a major caregiver is irresponsible with or in denial of his or her feeling reality, the feeling reality will be picked up and carried by his or induced in his or her child. But as the parent is irresponsible or in denial of their feeling reality, as they are abusing their child, the child will automatically take that feeling reality on. They cannot stop it. The only thing that would stop it would be the child's boundary system. And children do not fully develop a boundary system that would stop something like that until they're adults. So when they're little children, without any way of protecting themselves, as their parent is irresponsible with her in denial of their own feeling reality, especially during the act of abuse, that child will take the feeling reality on. Now, feeling reality is an energy field. Have you ever noticed that when you stand close to someone within 18 inches, that they don't even have to tell you what they're feeling, you can sense what they're feeling? It's energy, and you give it off. When you're experiencing feelings, you give that off. You can sense it. We can't see it, but it's there. Everybody knows that. That's why, in terms of our reality, probably our most powerful reality around other people is our feeling reality when it is given off. That's the way we are the most intimate with someone, with the feeling reality. It's terribly, terribly powerful. Now, I want to move on into explaining the shaming process to you. And in order to do that, and the shaming process is about that principle, I need to define shame for you. Shame is one of the feeling realities. It's like guilt or pain or joy or lust or anything, any other kind of emotion. It is an emotion, but it is special. It is special because when you feel shame, it puts you on alert to your sense of worth. That as you feel shame, you will have some awareness of how worthwhile you are, where you are on that level, either down or up or even, as you experience shame. It is, and because of that, it is the only, what I call, I am feeling experience you have. It's about, truly, when you feel it, it puts you into a very close sense about yourself to yourself. It's about who you are in terms of your level of worth when you feel shame.
This is the end of Side 1. For more valuable information, turn cassette over now and continue to listen on Side 2. Do not fast forward.
But there's two kinds of shame going on for any codependent. And again, part of recovery is learning to tell the difference between your own shame and carried shame. When you are experiencing your own shame reality, you will be having a mild feeling of embarrassment, and that is all it is. It may be, well, it might move from mild to moderate to strong, but it isn't overwhelming. You're just put on notice that you have made a mistake, and you need to correct it or stop doing whatever you're doing. It's not okay to do. So you experience shame whenever you notice yourself making a mistake, or whenever you notice yourself being imperfect, or whenever you notice yourself being fallible. That's your own shame. But it is, in my opinion, in terms of the characteristics of shame, it is terribly, terribly powerful and alerts you to your sense of worthwhileness. And that sets it above and beyond any other feeling reality. Now, your own shame does two very important things for you, which I've talked about already, but I'll repeat them again. Your own shame does two things for you. First of all, it tells you your poop smells, which allows you to be accountable. And the second thing is it tells you you're not God or goddess of the family, which allows you to be spiritual. In other words, it tells you are not perfect, you are imperfect, and accountable. When you experience induced or carried shame, though, you're not just making mistakes but okay and accountable. You're over here all of a sudden feeling less than and worthless and horrible about yourself. Now, what happens to a child who is being abused by a major caregiver or caretaker is this. So here's the child. And here's the adult, and what's going on here is that this major caretaker is abusing the child. Now, what happens is this. When the child is being abused, the major caretaker, in essence, leans over the child and says this. I've said this before. Says this, I am better than you are. I'm out of control because you made me do it. If you just shape up and do it the way I'm telling you to do it, I wouldn't have to fling myself out of control and beat the snot out of you. You're being beaten because you've caused this to happen. It's your fault. I'm above you. You are below me. I am perfect, you're imperfect. I am God of the family. As that very thing happens, this major caretaker is acting shamelessly. That means they are without shame at that moment. That means they are in denial of their own shame. And if the child is fairly close to them, that energy of shame that's being denied right here, even though it's there, gets passed to the child. That follows that principle up there. Whenever a major caretaker is irresponsible with or in denial of his or her own feeling reality, the feeling reality will get picked up and carried or induced in his or her child, and the child will become overwhelmed. The child goes from being okay to now being less than. And what I want to share with you also is that in any functional family, this happens. In any, not I am God or Goddess of the family, but in any family system, even when it's functional, the parents will occasionally fail to be there for the child. That's normal. No parent is perfect. But the difference is that in the functional system, the parent is accountable for when they do that and will make amends to them for that. But if the child's in a dysfunctional system and this experience is repeated, what happens is if this child winds up getting repetitively shamed as this parent is being shameless, then they develop a core of carried or induced shame reality that large. And so they develop what we call a shame-based personality. They carry on board a core of carried or induced shame reality that is constantly telling them that they are less than other people, which is immobilizing and is the heart of codependency, whether it is known to the person because they do not experience self-esteem or unknown because they're avoiding that whole issue through arrogance and grandiosity, it is still going on. Now, in addition to this problem, other feeling reality too, if it's being denied or the parent is being irresponsible with it, other feeling reality can pass to that child too and become a component of that shame core. That if the parent is being irresponsible with or in denial of other feeling reality, that will pass along with the shame. Shame is always passed during an abusive episode because the parent has to be in a shameless state in order to do that. But if the parent is angry and being irresponsible with his anger because he's beating the child, you know, if the child makes a mistake, spills his milk at the table, dad flies into a rage and in raging beats his child, that's an act of the father being irresponsible with his anger reality. So what happens is that not only the child gets a good dose of the father's shame, the child gets a good dose of the father's anger. And so inside his shame core as a codependent adult, the therapist will find there's a ton of anger in there if this has been a usual experience for that person as a child. The father might be irresponsible with his pain. Something may have happened here to the child. It annoyed the father, and the father got into a lot of pain. Maybe the child did something that was embarrassing to the father in front of somebody, and the father, not only that, felt some pain, but denied the pain or relieved the pain by beating it into his child. That's another act of the father being irresponsible with his pain. That, too, will pass into the shame core. Another way it can happen is maybe mom's over here watching this happen, watching dad beat the little boy because the little boy spilled the milk at the table. Mom's watching. On some level, mom and her, you know, understands that that's not okay. Has a lot of pain and fear of her own, but instead of using it to protect her child, using it to be mature at this point, she just holds that in. If the child is in the vicinity and can see that and experiences mom failing to protect him, guess what happens to this child? He's going to get pain and anger and shame from dad, but he's going to get fear and pain from mom. See, she's feeling her feelings, but she's irresponsible with them. She doesn't go ahead and act and take care of her child with her feeling reality. She's being irresponsible with her pain and fear. So with one simple act, the child gets absolutely and totally trashed. If this is repetitive, the shame core gets huge. And it drives the codependent thinking and behavior, and it is codependent feeling reality. It's carried or induced feeling reality. It sets up the dynamics for codependency. And it's why it's so dreadfully hard to treat, because unless you know this, you can't therapeutically even begin to approach this issue. If your therapist doesn't know this, they can't even begin to really treat you adequately. That's called the shaming process. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about the differences between shame and guilt, because I told you that one of the things about shame is that we're not to talk about it. Well, one of the ways we don't talk about it is we call it guilt instead of shame. If you're codependent, know you're codependent, and experience a lot of guilt, I want to tell you right now that 9 times out of 10, it's not guilt you're experiencing, it's a shame attack. It is the experience of induced or carried shame reality that you are having, not guilt. Now, let me tell you how to tell the difference. Shame comes about whenever you notice yourself making a mistake or somebody else bony fingers you about it and says you screwed up. Like you go in and talk to your boss and they say, you know, you're not doing your job very well, blah, 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 blah. You'll experience shame. You experience guilt whenever you notice yourself breaking your own rules or operating outside your value system. That's when you feel guilt. They're two distinct experiences. Now, you're not going to know how to tell the difference if you're a dyed-in-the-wool codependent. So whenever you're feeling shame or guilt, but you want to, you know, you're calling it guilt and you're not sure what it is, ask yourself a question. Did I break my rules? Did I break my own rules? Or am I just noticing, or has somebody just noticed me making some sort of mistake, like I fell down the stairs, or I failed to get milk at the market when that's what I set out to do, or whatever. Sometimes you feel guilt and shame at the same time. Because you've broken your rules, but you've also noticed that you didn't want to do that, and so you've made a mistake as well as broken your rules, so you have them both at the same time. But we are systematically taught within our culture to call shame guilt, and that's how it hides. That's the main way that we hide our shame. The other thing about it is that, now I forgot. Went in and out of my mind. Well, guess I'll have to let that one go. Shame is about who you are, though. Guilt is about breaking your own rules. And it's important to learn to tell the difference, because when you feel guilty and you're not feeling shame, you're not going to be into codependent behavior, probably. What you really have to watch for is when you're into that carried or induced shame, because you got to do something immediately. As soon as you realize you're there, you got to do something about that, or you'll continue to act out, think, and of course feel codependently, and you're lost while you're doing that. Shame is a mild feeling of embarrassment. Guilt is kind of a pressured feeling in your abdomen. They do feel very, very, very similar. And I think that's another reason why they get confused. Now, whereas shame, your own shame, is a mild feeling of embarrassment, carried shame, when you feel it, will be experienced by what we call a shame attack. Now, let me describe that, because that'll also help you know when you're doing that. When you go into a shame attack, it isn't unusual to start feeling as though your body is getting smaller. You'll have the sense that you want to disappear or run away or crawl under your chair. You'll have an added sense that everybody's looking at you. It isn't unusual to feel nauseated or dizzy or spacey. It isn't unusual for you to start talking in this little childlike voice. My husband confronted me that for quite a while before I realized what I was doing. I'd be in a shame attack, and I'd be talking to him, and I'd be talking to him like this little girl, and he'd say, "Why are you talking to me in that voice?" And then I'd realize I was doing that, and I'd stop it. When you're into a shame attack, there is a dreadful sense of feeling diminished and inadequate and less than, and down below everybody else. And you need to begin to tune into that. A lot of therapy is designed to reverse this back up here. It's called shame reduction work. It's very powerful work, but you have to understand the dynamics of this to even begin to to do the therapy around it. So it's an important concept to understand. Now, I have a few minutes for questions. I finished faster than what I thought I would. Got about 5 minutes for that. Now, if you're going to ask a question, can you do it kind of in a short fashion? I'll have to repeat it back to you. Please don't get into a real, real long question, so there's a lot of dead time. Okay.
Is it reasonable that, other issues that a parent hasn't handled will be passed on? It's like each succeeding generation has passed on the problem and nobody ever handles it. So it sounds like recovery is the generation that handles it.
Okay. The question is, does this pass down intergenerationally? The answer is yes. That's what I wanted to tell you. I knew I stopped short for some reason. Let me show you something. Minor detail. Thank you. Okay, now, what's really happening is that this major caretaker is shame-based himself. He's got a core of shame on board, and beneath that shame core is his own shame, because everybody has that. But he can't feel his own shame because it's covered up with his shame core. And all the time he can't feel that shame, he will be set up to be acting shamelessly. What happens is that the child makes a mistake, and because the parent is gathering other esteem constantly from his environment and it's terribly important to this parent that the child be perfect in public, or just perfect, what happens is that if the child makes mistakes, the parent will have a shame attack over it. As they go into a shame attack, they can no longer experience their own shame. As that is going on, they are set up to be shameless. As they are shameless, they will abuse. So there is no way, in my opinion, a shame-based parent can ever be an appropriate parent. And so as this goes on for the parent, they create codependent, shame-based children. This child grows up, has the same problem as dad and mom, and the trouble is, if the child has two codependent parents, two shame-based parents, they get a mix of all that stuff. And I think that's why, as this keeps getting mixed and mixed and mixed, the succeeding generations are getting sicker and sicker in some ways. But anyway, the shame-based parent begets a shame-based child that grows up and creates another shame-based child, and goes on and on and on and on. And the secrets, the undealt with issues that the parent has because of their own issues of abuse and whatever, that are held secret by this parent, oftentimes get acted out by this child. Now, what I believe that's about is that it is about boundaries. That within this disease, especially, there are a lot of sexual secrets. And it isn't that the child can really act out the parent's secret. It's more the fact that the child doesn't have developed boundaries, and the parent doesn't either. And so the child sees the parent behaving sexually inappropriately, doesn't have any idea that what's going on is inappropriate, and mimics that behavior, but also doesn't have a fully developed sexual boundary, for example, in terms of boundaries, to not reenact that behavior, or even have awareness that what's going on is inappropriate. So I think kids acting out parent secrets is more about not having boundaries and having behavior demonstrated by the parent because they don't have boundaries that's dysfunctional, so it gets repeated. Okay? That's a good question. I have time for one more. I think did you have a question? Okay, yeah. So, the reason, if you're codependent and you had abusive parents, it's because they were shame-based. And they're only going to, just as I said, intent is almost irrelevant. They're going to repeat what was done to them. When you got two codependent parents, it can get really pretty bad.
As recovery goes on, say that you're the major caregiver and you're in recovery for codependency, as you clear up, then will that also benefit your children?
Yes, the question is that if you were codependent, had children, treated them dysfunctionally, then got into recovery and started changing some of your thinking and behavior and feeling reality, will it benefit your children? Absolutely. Children, children are always waiting for parents to somehow get their act together. While they're still kids. They have a sense that something's wrong with you, sort of. And so they're constantly perched waiting for you to be appropriate. They don't quite know what appropriate is, but they do know your behavior is out of order. Because
yeah.
They're feeling reality around it.
What if they're adults now? What if those children are
adults? Okay, so children are adults. And now you're in recovery with adult children. And so they're not living with you. And I have that issue. What I have done is that I have let them know, now that they're adults, who I am and what the problems are. I don't give them all the gory details of that because they don't need to know some of that. But the part they do need to know, I've let them know about and talk to them about what I know their issues are, not as a therapist, but as a mother, and told them where they can go to get help and supported them in doing that. And my daughter, who's 22, has done just that. And she's feeling better and is in recovery from her own issues of codependency. So you can tell them about it, but you can't force them to do anything. The more you push on them, the more likely they'll resist. But if you have little ones at home, or stuck with kids at home, as you start to be more appropriate, they will start responding to that. If they've gotten real sick because you really have trashed them, then you're going to probably have to get help from a therapist that can do the intervening, because probably your child by that point won't be willing to listen to you. And why should they?
What if you have a situation of a divorce and the child is with both mother and father are codependent individuals? Most of the time they're with the mother and the mother is getting her act together, but then part of the time they're with this other person that you have no control over what that person is doing with the child.
Right. What?
How do they handle being torn? In other words, they're seeing things going all right on one half of it, and they're back to
okay, the question is this. When a child is living with a parent who's trying to get themselves or is in codependency recovery, yet occasionally visits the non-custodial parent and gets subjected to codependent abusive behavior, well, where does the child stand? The child stands in a very difficult position. But they will do one or two things. They'll either opt for the healthier parent or they'll opt for the sicker parent. Either way, you know what I mean? And they'll get you into conflict. Again, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. You can maintain your own codependency sobriety. And no matter what, no matter what's going on with the non-custodial spouse, you can still respond appropriately and approach the issue with your kids. If they get way out of control with it, you're going to, again, have to go to the therapeutic community and get some help. You can reach them better after they become adults, I think, sometimes with this. It's a problem. Now I have to close.